I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, we'll talk about the politics of beauty. New figures show that more people of color underwent cosmetic procedures last year, even with the economic downturn. Is that because minorities have more money and feel more confident, or do they feel pressure to nip and tuck away at the features that make them unique? We'll talk about that with two prominent surgeons of color in just a few minutes. But first, we're going to take a walk on the opposite side of the economic divide and take a look at the cost of being poor in the U.S. For the last few weeks, we've been talking about issues like the Obama administration's efforts to make the consumer credit industry more consumer-friendly by reining in arbitrary rate hikes and the like. But what about the fact that many Americans are outside of the credit, banking, and other industries that middle-class Americans take for granted? According to the Census Bureau, more than 37 million people in this country are living in poverty. And for many of these Americans, credit cards are out of the question, not to mention checking and savings accounts, fresh and inexpensive food, and affordable, comfortable, and safe housing. Joining me to talk about why it costs so much to be poor is Bradley Schiller, a visiting professor at the University of Nevada, Reno. He's the author of The Economics of Poverty and Discrimination. Also with us is Danette Tucker. She's a regular contributor in our weekly mom segment, and she recently lost her job as an office manager at an IT firm, and she's been looking for work and living off unemployment. She's here with me in our Washington, D.C. studio. Welcome to you both. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you, Michelle.
Professor Schiller, let me start with you. Has it always been the case that it costs more to be poor, or is that a recent urban phenomenon? And I'm thinking about the fact that, for example, in my parents' time, their parents would send them down south, for example, in the summer because the cost of living was cheaper. And so I wanted to ask, is it a recent thing that it costs more to if you are low income?
No, I don't think so. The problem in the poor communities is the volume of business is very low, and so small retail establishments serve the poor, and they typically have higher costs. Higher insurance costs, higher labor costs, no economies of scale. So I think that's been the case in urban areas throughout.
What are the things that cost more if you're poor?
Well, what costs more? You already mentioned credit. Credit's a huge issue. A lot of poor people don't have regular bank accounts, much less ATM cards. And so when they do get checks, they have to go to a check cashing service, which typically charge very high rates. You could go in with a check for $100 and have to pay a $10 a check cashing fee, and that's a very expensive process. Whereas typically the middle class has bank accounts, ATM cards, debit cards, and easy access to that kind of retail credit.
Why don't poor Danny? I haven't forgotten about you. I'm going to bring you in a minute. But why don't a lot of low income people have checking and savings accounts? I mean, are the minimum deposits so high? Or are these banking establishments not available?
Well, there's fewer outlets, banking outlets, in poor communities, again, because of the volume of business. It's simply uneconomical. Secondly, a lot of low-income people deal more in cash than they do in regular payroll checks. And that's why they don't have credit cards. That's one of the reasons they don't have credit cards.
Daniel, let me bring you into the conversation. You lost your job in March, and you also had the bad luck of having your car die on you right around the same time. So what have you noticed that's been different for you since both of those things happened?
Not much. We just make the adjustment. I mean, of course, what's different is I don't have my salary coming in, but I still got to pay the rent, and unemployment doesn't pay the rent. So I have to hustle, what we call hustle. I guess you guys call it being frugal. But basically, we get up every day and we say, okay, what do I have to pay for? How much money do I have? And how do I do it without going to jail? You hustle. So we've always been hustling.
Car but no car? Like, for example, to buy groceries, for example. Big difference, car and no car?
I have to get on the subway, or the bus. But when I get a ride, we have riders. Remember, at our markets that Mr. Schiller was talking about that are in, the hood, they also have riders. So there are a lot of things made available to us that they don't talk about in the studies when they study the poor, quote-unquote, the working poor. They look at their numbers, but nobody comes and knock on the door, sit down, I'll tell you the truth. We're making it. We're used to making it with that. I'd like to have my salary back. And yeah, I'm busting it to get a job, but until then, I still got to make it.
What about the prices, though? I mean, when you need to get a ride for groceries, how much does it cost?
$5. I got my little man down the corner. Hey, I need a ride. Or the girl next door. I tutor her kid. She has a car. So I tutor her kid. You see, we hustle. I tutor her kid. Kid makes an A. I get a ride to the grocery store. She has EBT and food stamps. She buy me a pack of chicken. That's what we do. That's what we've always done. But they don't put that in your studies. You know, they give you your numbers, and then they go, you know, and let you know, well, this is the poor. We are working people who don't make a lot of money. You know, we don't make enough for our outgo, but we still making it with a smile on our face. Most of us don't do credit because we don't want any credit. You know, credit cards will kill you. People go, oh, they don't do credit because, you know, they can't get credit. Look at this economy right now. Look at what credit has done to many people. One thing I have not thought about doing is jumping out of no window. I'm okay. Fine.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're talking about the cost of being poor with Danette Tucker, who recently lost her job. We're also speaking with Bradley Schiller. He's a professor of economics at the University of Nevada, Reno. Okay, Danny, we take your point. You're fine. You don't want anybody to feel sorry for you. But you talk about the outflow is greater than the inflow. Talk a little bit more about
that. But that's the case when we're working, too. You understand? I mean, one thing he is right about, the things cost a lot in our neighborhoods because of the convenience. But one thing they did not mention in the Washington Post article, I didn't hear Mr. Shuler mention, is a lot of the people in my neighborhood are getting public benefits. TANF, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, they're getting WIC checks. These companies, these businesses come in, they can charge that because they know the government is paying it. Most of us that are paying cash, I don't get my milk from the convenience store, convenient or not. I'm going to go to Safeway because they got it on sale and I got a bonus card. Okay, so we're not really handicapped by a lot of what people are saying, you know?
Yeah, Professor Schiller, this leads to a point that you were making to us when we were talking about this a little earlier. You talk about, people look at the figure of people who are living in poverty at the moment, but you say that that number is fluid. It actually fluctuates, and it fluctuates because people move in and out of poverty. Would you talk a little bit more about how that works?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, if you look at the government numbers on poverty, what you see is that 35 to 37 million people have been poor every year for the last dozen years. But it's not the same people. And your other guest, Danny Tucker, there is an example. I mean, when she had a salary at the IT firm, she wasn't counted as part of the poverty population. Then she lost her job along with millions of other Americans this last year, and now she's in poverty and she's adapting and getting by, she says. But we don't expect Danny to stay unemployed forever. She will find another job and she'll move out of the poverty ranks. And this happens every single year. Literally millions of people who are losing jobs, millions of people who are unemployed and finding jobs, even in this depressed economy, millions of people are moving from unemployment to employment. Unfortunately, more people are moving out of jobs into the ranks of the unemployed.
Now, we talked about that. We've been talking a lot about this credit card bill that's moving through the Congress, and President Obama hopes to sign it by Memorial Day. And one of the points that advocates for this bill make is that the sort of the structure of that industry works against the consumer with the, you know, arbitrary rate hikes. And one of the things they're trying to do is put some sort of brakes on so that the consumer, well, in essence, to, for example, require the credit card companies to give more notice before changing the rate and things of that sort. But what about, and as we've discussed, that a lot of people who live in poverty are outside of that industry. Are there things that, in your view, from a policy perspective, should be discussed to address structural issues that affect this particular part of the population? You talked about, say, the high cost of rent in urban areas, which is why sort of goods and services cost more. We talked about including, you know, food and gas and so forth. But is there really anything from a policy perspective that can be can be done about that?
Well, first of all, I think I need to point out that the Obama reforms on credit card are only going to hurt the poor. It sounds wonderful to say that the government is going to limit rate increases on credit cards. But those rate increases are not arbitrary. They're related to the credit history of the individual and money market conditions. It's already difficult for poor people to get credit cards. It's going to be much more difficult if these reforms pass.
Okay, but to my question.
So the Obama reforms actually hurt the poor in a significant way.
Okay, take your point on that. But what about the question I was asking about some of the structural issues we've talked about? So the high cost of services or higher cost of goods and services, particularly in lower income neighborhoods. Is there any policy question there to be addressed?
Well, there are policy questions. I mean, we tried several things over many decades, like enterprise zones and so forth, offering tax benefits to businesses that set up in low income areas. But you're still stuck with the fact that land is very valuable in the inner city. It's you can't build big Safeways in the inner city, so that inevitably you have small establishments as opposed to larger ones to take advantage of economies of scale.
Danny, what would be the best thing that would, you know, as we've talked about, you're kind of moving in and out of different income groups. What would be, of course, a job would be the most important thing to kind of helping you sort of stabilize your position. But what else? A job.
No offense. But for a specialist to stop analyzing us, that would be the best thing for me. One thing about what he said, I don't always understand where they get these things from. We have a big, gigantic Safeway in the hood and a big, gigantic Giant in the hood, okay? We're not limited to these convenience stores. I not only want a job, yes, okay, and the same things that you want or middle-class American wants. I want people to stop labeling us and, you know, and talking, you know, what is he talking about? I don't go to the Safeway for certain things. I don't go to the convenience store for certain things. I go to Murray's. I go to Discount Mart. In other words, what we have in our neighborhood is tailored fit to us, okay? And it works for us, okay? And that's what we need more of.
How do you know that there isn't something better?
It may be something better, but again, I'm on Nail and Good Hope Road, and that's what's good for us right there, okay? I'm sure there may be some things better. I hope I get a good job that pays me a lot better, but I don't particularly want to move. I like where I am because of what it's affordable, and I have a wash and dry inside my apartment. But I can still get these things, you know, that I guess he's trying to say the poor don't get. You know, like I said, most of us don't have credit cards because we don't want them, you know? So it's these things that, you know, we have the dreams, you know, and we pursue them the way we pursue them.
All right.
You know, if that makes sense.
All right. Well, very briefly.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, and every survey done of expectations and aspirations of poor people versus non-poor people show that, yes, exactly, poor people have exactly the same aspirations that the middle class does.
Okay. Bradley Schiller, a professor of economics at the University of Nevada at Reno. He's the author of The Economics of Poverty and Discrimination. He joined us from his home in Reno. Dani Tucker is a regular on our weekly parenting segment, The Moms. She was here with me in our Washington, D.C. studios. Thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.